This podcast is sponsored by Talkspace. You know when you're really stressed or not feeling so great about your life or about yourself? Talking to someone who understands can really help. But who is that person? How do you find them? Where do you even start? Talkspace. Talkspace makes it easy to get the support you need. With Talkspace, you can go online, answer a few questions about your preferences, and be matched with a therapist. And because you'll meet your therapist online, you don't have to take time off work or arrange childcare. You'll meet on your schedule, wherever you feel most at ease. If you're depressed, stressed, struggling with a relationship, or if you want some counseling for you and your partner, or just need a little extra one-on-one support, Talkspace is here for you. Plus, Talkspace works with most major insurers, and most insured members have a $0 copay. No insurance? No problem. Now, get $80 off of your first month with promo code SPACE80 when you go to Talkspace.com. Match with a licensed therapist today at Talkspace.com. Save $80 with code SPACE80 at Talkspace.com.
Welcome back to Empowering Conversations of Hope and Opportunity, the show where we turn big oopsies into even bigger heck yeah. I'm your moderator, Lisa Jones. If you ever spilled coffee on your shirt before a big meeting, sent a text to the wrong person, or made a career move that flopped, good news, you're in exactly the right place. Because today, we're shining a bright, sparkly light on the idea that every slip up, mess up, or full-on faceplant can be the trampoline you bounce higher from. We're going to swap stories, giggle at our goofs, and share real tools you can use to turn every misstep into your next win. So grab your pen, grab your sense of humor, and let's flip those flubs into fuel. After all, whoops just means you're brave enough to try. And here on Echo, we celebrate every brave try. Are you ready? Let's turn those oopsies into opportunities. Stay tuned. It's going to be good. And first, I want to introduce who's here with me today, and that's our usual suspects. Let's start with Debbie.
Hi, I'm Debbie Wimberly, a passionate voice for quality health, here to flip the script on what true wellness really looks like. As a health quality advocate, cannabinoid educator, and consultant, I'm here to share my story of taking the impossible and making it possible by demystifying the endocannabinoid system and cannabinoid therapies. Time to rethink how we manage health and outdated health models and embrace options that support the body's natural balance. It's time we change the conversation around health. It all starts with empowering conversations of hope and opportunity. Let's raise the standard. Let's make I feel better the new normal.
Yes, thank you, Debbie. And how about you, Amy?
Hi, I'm Amy Weishaus. I am a lifelong educator and learner. I bring to the table years of wonderful, exciting teaching experience in the high school arena. And I also have developed a platform about the vital importance of empathy in every single arena of our lives, from the classroom to the workplace to the neighborhood, and even empathy and self-compassion for ourselves. And I'm delighted to be here, and I am looking forward to today's topic.
Yes, me too. Thank you, Amy. And I'm Lisa Jones, a speaker, consultant, and author that leverages the power of humor, gamification, and play as fuel to enhance collaboration, increase engagement, and maximize productivity. And now that we've all introduced ourselves, we want to remind you that each of our episodes feature several segments. Our first segment is called Echoing the Hope. So let's discuss our question for today. And our first question is, what's one oops moment in your life that secretly opened a door you never saw coming? And how did it help you grow stronger or braver? So I'm going to start with Debbie today.
Lisa, this one's not going to be any surprise, but maybe it will be. But one of my biggest oops moments came wrapped in white coats and prescription bottles. I had trusted my doctors as my sole health advocates for over 2 decades, faithfully following all their guidance. And then boom, they pulled the plug, just like that. They informed me they could no longer help me. There was no warning signs, no plan, no backup plan. At a time when I needed them the most, my health was crashing. That rock bottom moment handed me a flashlight, turning on my curiosity, where I found answers through the science of the ECS and cannabinoid therapies. And most importantly, I found me. The oops didn't just open the door, it kicked down the wall. I went from a victim of the opiate crisis to being a victor to building a network that helps to educate and advocate for better health. So yeah, that medical abandonment was brutal, but it became the fire that lit my purpose.
Thank you, Debbie. And as you were talking about that, I think of so many different oops moments, similar to what you're talking about. So I'll tell mine after Amy goes. I want to hear what Amy says first. So Amy, how about you?
Well, I'm going back to a time when I should have been filled with a lot of hope, and that was on college graduation. And I really was not prepared. I wasn't prepared in my decision of what I was going to do right after graduation. Part of it was because I was suffering from Crohn's disease, and it was somewhat debilitating, as far as draining my energy and giving me a certain mindset of limitations. So the oops was I wasn't really prepared. I flirted with the idea of journalism. And guess what? I thought, I'm not going to cope with those deadlines. I'm not going to cope with the stress of the career. I flirted with urban planning. City planning was the buzzword in those days. And then I thought, that's going to be really stressful. So I went to the College Placement Bureau, and I picked up this loose leaf of job opportunities. And wouldn't you know it? Oops, something fell on the floor. I picked it up. I read this pamphlet, and it was from the Princeton University Office of Teacher Training and Internship. And I was in neighboring New Brunswick, New Jersey, at college at Douglas Rutgers University. And I said, oh my goodness, here's a program. I didn't prepare for student teaching. I didn't take undergraduate teaching credits. I didn't know what I was doing, but this program is going to provide it all in a summer program and a year-long internship. It was amazing. I'm very passionate about my concern for the teaching profession in our country today. And I hope and hopefully maybe be a part of a movement to make teaching a more attractive, a more rewarding career option than it may appear to be today. So this program led to bringing people like myself, new graduates with strong subject matter content, and also bringing people from the business world with experience and getting them, natural born teachers, getting them into the classroom. So what became my setback became an amazing year. You're going to laugh. My first year salary was $8,000. And that to me was $1 million. And I lived off it very well. But the point is that from illness and indecision, a whoops moment became a triumph of faring very well, although it was stressful and it was definitely challenging and had deadlines, but I managed and I coped. And be curious, be open, and the world can be your oyster. And punchline is, I wound up teaching journalism, and many of my students have gone on to be world-class journalists. So it's possible. It's all possible. Setbacks into triumphs.
Yes. Thank you, Amy. Thank you for sharing that. And I'm also, as one of the things you said that was really interesting is $8,000. That is like a wow moment. Like my mouth dropped open when you said that. And I don't think the camera was on me, but that's what happened. And I would love an episode of how you survived on $8,000 in a year. Like that's true budgeting skills right there. So that's a whole nother episode. Thank you for sharing that. And the one that I think of here is 3 months before my wedding, and you both have heard this story, but some of our new listeners haven't. I got smacked with the biggest oops of my life. It was a brain tumor diagnosed, right? So talk about a plot twist. So here's the thing, that giant scary oops, it cracked me open because it showed me right into the deep end of vulnerability and playfulness. Instead of crawling into a fear cave, I asked myself, how can I make this fun? Because that's what I do. So I leaned all the way into playing. I played games, laughter, improv, all the things to keep my spirit awake and my brain fighting back, because that's the most important thing. And the door that opened was a life built around turning every setback into a playground. And that tumor taught me that play isn't frivolous. It's full, it's fuel. It's what kept me moving, healing, and believing that I could bounce higher after the fall. And that's really what this is all about. So yeah, my big oops was actually my big aha. So now every whoopsie I hit just reminds me you can't lose if you keep playing. You only level up. So that's what all the stories that we just shared in a nutshell mean to me. We just kept leveling up. And I want to move into our second segment, and that is called Echoing the Opportunity. And the question for you both today is, what hidden opportunity are you sitting on right now? Maybe it's an idea, talent, or a crazy dream you've been afraid to share. And then what tiny step could you take this week to give it a chance to grow? So I will start with Debbie again for this one. We'll just stay with Debbie for the first one.
I have to thank you for asking this question because this question actually has led me to the answer that I'm going to share today, which is actually going to be how I'm going to bring this forward. So I've been sitting with something lately and for quite a while, and it's quietly been tapping me on the shoulder, and it's bold, it's different, it's playful. And honestly, it feels like a celebration waiting to happen. And it's about rewriting how we explore health. Not what outdated and broken rules and restrictions hold us to, but with curiosity, expression, and full of color. Think less, check the box, more, no, follow the spark. Less clinical, more creative. It's about tuning in, not shutting down, about laughing while learning, feeling empowered, not overwhelmed. I can't tell you everything yet. Some ideas need space to bloom. They're just c coming as I've been sitting here thinking about this all over the whole weekend. But what I can say is this: it's coming. It's rooted in freedom, curiosity, and the kind of fun we often forget belongs in healthcare conversations. My tiny step this week is saying this out loud, letting it be real, letting the energy out into the world. Because when something lights you up like this, you don't need to shout it, you just need to glow it.
Yes, I love it. Thank you. Can't wait to hear more about that. How about you, Amy?
Well, I'm sitting on an opportunity, which actually is a poem that I am very, very, very attached to. The poem speaks of empathy. It is sort of an anthem for empathy, and it's something that I've researched. I used it way back in my teaching days. And I'm trying to find out the authorship of this poem. I'm still working on it, and I have an inspiration for it, and I would just like to share what that is. There's a poem that went viral a number of years ago, and the poem is called The Dash. The Dash. And if you haven't read it or heard it, it's by an author, Linda Ellis, and it starts out, I read of a man who stood to speak at the funeral of a friend. He referred to the dates on her tombstone from the beginning to the end. He noted that first came the date of her birth and spoke of the following date with tears. But he said that what mattered most of all was the dash between those years. And the poem is based on that lovely reflection of how do we live our dash? And this segment, this episode today is all about wanting to live our lives without mistakes, really imperfect step. And if we do make the inevitable mistakes of being imperfectly or being perfectly imperfect, then we're going to learn from them and we're going to live the kind of life that the Dash proposes. So now let's get back to my poem and my aspiration. My vision is to have the poem go viral. I'm still taking baby steps to clear the freedom to release it as mine, edited and specifically to me. And it's my hope that it can be an anthem for people today about appreciating the people next to us with their faults, with their mistakes, helping us learn lessons about our lives through them, and to realize that people sitting right next to us every single day are the people who are going to help us get over those setbacks. More importantly, we're going to help them move forward and get over their setbacks. So I hope in a few months on a future episode, I'm hoping that
this podcast is sponsored by Talkspace. You know, when you're really stressed or not feeling so great about your life or about yourself, talking to someone who understands can really help. But who is that person? How do you find them? Where do you even start? Talkspace. Talkspace makes it easy to get the support you need. With Talkspace, you can go online, answer a few questions about your preferences, and be matched with a therapist. And because you'll meet your therapist online, you don't have to take time off work or arrange childcare. You'll meet on your schedule, wherever you feel most at ease. If you're depressed, stressed, struggling with a relationship, or if you want some counseling for you and your partner, or just need a little extra one-on-one support, Talkspace is here for you. Plus, Talkspace works with most major insurers, and most insured members have a $0 copay. No insurance? No problem. Now get $80 off of your first month with promo code SPACE80 when you go to Talkspace.com. Match with a licensed therapist today at Talkspace.com. Save $80 with code SPACE80 at Talkspace.com.
This will be household knowledge, household information, and that the poem will be in everybody's space, even internationally. So that is my vision and that is my dream.
Oh, thanks for sharing, Amy. The empathy anthem. Well, I am waiting here with bated breath for that. The next couple, you'll keep us posted, I'm sure. So thank you for sharing. And I was thinking about this, and I've got this slightly bonkers dream. And for right now, I'm calling it the Play Lab, but that's open to change. But if you think about a pop-up playground for grown-ups, it's part improv class, part brainstorm jam, part let's just turn these big messes into genius idea sessions. But really what my goal is, I want people to walk in stressed out, which there's plenty of people walking around stressed out right now. So I shouldn't have trouble finding them. And then I want them to walk out snorting with laughter, holding sticky notes full of new solutions. And I've been hoarding this idea in the too fun to be real corner of my brain. You know, that place, the one that says, one day when you have more time, money, courage, you'll do this. Well, newsflash, that day isn't coming unless I put my clown shoes on now, which I'm not. So my baby step here is I'm sketching out a 1-hour prototype and I'm going to invite three brave souls to test drive it with me. Because I think big opportunities are just playful experiments in disguise. So if you've got one of these ideas too, something that tickles your brain that makes your stomach flip, guess what? That's the good stuff. Do the tiny thing first. Make the call, write the pitch, tape a note to your bathroom mirror that says, who says I can't? Then watch that magic crack open. So thank you both for contributing to that segment. And our next segment, which I know you're going to be shocked, is my favorite one because it's the Echoing the Laughter segment. And our question today is, what's the funniest oopsie moment you've had? The one that still makes you laugh or cringe? And what did you learn from it, Debbie?
Well, you know, I'm always looking for that one medical event that can provide laughter so that we can learn that it has a place in our health. And so I've got one for you that I still laugh about and cringe when I think about it. So I've been wearing surgical masks regularly for years to protect myself because I have MAC lung disease and COPD. And I got bored with the plain ones, so I started customizing them and drawing big smiles on them, all hand-drawn. And it was my way of bringing a little joy and a little sass into every appointment. So one day I showed up at the, and this is also ironic, I showed up at the wound care center taking care of a wound that I had that would not heal. And I had just created this new mask with this great big red smile painted on it with a big red magic marker. And it was thicker and bolder than I'd ever done before. I thought it looked cool. And so I head out the door and I'm standing in the hallway and the wait waiting to be called back. And one of the nurses saw me from a distance and he panicked and he started rushing towards down the hall and saying, "She's bleeding, her mouth is bleeding, her mouth is bleeding." And I couldn't see what he was looking at. I turned to look down the hall and it was no one, it was just me. And then I could soon realize he was talking about me. And so I was waving my hand saying, no, I'm really okay. It's not that." And come to realize my marker had bled, so it looked like my face was just bleeding. And so it was just ironic that this was a place where I'm going to get wound healing done. They assumed that I had another wound that was gushing out blood, and the panic turned into laughter, real bellyache laughter. And he looked at me and said, "Girl, that's great for Halloween, just maybe not for the hospital hallway." Laughter is real medicine. Art is powerful, sometimes too powerful. And three, if you're going to paint your smile on, check the mirror one more time before you walk out the door. You never know who you'll run into or how real your smile might look from across the hall.
Oh, that's funny. That is so true, too. And I'm also thinking, since I'm a very visual person, like as you were talking about that, I see that. And I'm wondering, like now you probably wish you took a picture of it, right? That would be
Oh,
like the
absolutely.
perfect LinkedIn post. Anyway,
Right.
thank you for sharing. How about you, Amy?
Oh, that is priceless, really. The funniest moment, I'm going back to a time that involved the high school arena and the students and a lesson that they all learned about empathy, actually. And I'm going from the aspect of it being one of the funniest, most rewarding things. And at this point in time, I'm going back now to 1985. And many of us know that this is a significant date now because it's the 40th anniversary of the Live Aid concert that occurred in Wembley Stadium in London and also the John F. Kennedy Stadium in Philadelphia. And I've been nostalgically reading up on this a little bit, and Queen, the band, was not really going to be like a headliner. They didn't think they'd draw that much, but turned out to be the show-stopping act of Live Aid. And in the era of that feeling of United States and the world trying to raise money for the starving people in Africa, my school, we as a faculty, we decided to do something that turned out to be so funny and so unforgettable. And we lip sang, well, we sang along with it. We did our own version of We Are the World. And if you haven't seen that piece of music history and global outreach, you must Google We Are the World. You will see in it Tina Turner, Michael Jackson, Bruce Springsteen, Willie Nelson, Diana Ross, Ray Charles, Bob Dylan, Billy Joel, Paul Simon, all the greats of the era singing a song, and all of us dressed up in a costume as one of those, epic singers. One of our English teacher men had little braids for Willie Nelson and Bruce Springsteen. He had a bandana on. I was Diana Ross in a wig and a little high heels and whatnot. And it was just amazing, amazing. So it's funny. We look back on it. I learned a little bit that Michael Jackson and Lionel Richie actually wrote the song, and it came off an album as the number one single. And we raised a lot of money for people who were very disadvantaged. So from something funny and the setback of world hunger comes this amazing lesson for students who have the extra dollars to contribute, to come to a cafeteria time amazing all school event and to grow and to learn and to do something really spectacular for humanity, from something funny to help the world's setbacks. And there we go, moving forward together.
Oh, I love that. It's fantastic. So, did you have a video of that? Or
You
did
know
they
something?
capture it somehow?
You know something? That video is worth $1 million to me. I was just thinking about that before we went on air today. And picture this, as archaic as an $8,000 a year salary was, and it was more than my friends were earning who were going to graduate school. I mean, I thought I was like a millionaire. So, along the same lines, though I'm thinking of how to make people understand in the modern audience, we had what were called the beta tapes. They were videotapes, the big beta tapes. It was on beta
Yeah.
format before the VHS format. I was trying to get
Got it.
straight in my mind. It was beta format. So I think a video exists somewhere on beta format, and it would have to be changed. And I'm actually going to contact one of my colleagues and find out if that exists, because all those old tapes, and I also recently had cassette tapes, they can all be transferred to CDs. And
Yes,
now
yes.
CDs are obsolete almost. So,
So
it
true.
could
And
go
then
on
there'll be
the
something
phone.
new, Amy. Thank
Yeah,
you. How
I'm
about
going to try
Debbie?
to
You
get
had.
that.
I just wanted to pop in and say it's actually the 40th year anniversary of Live Aid right now.
Right.
And CNN is running a special on Live Aid and how it all came about. It all was created from one man's vision of making a difference in the world. One man
Right.
had a vision, and
And
he actually.
I just want to, just for chronology's sake, because I know there are some people listening who are really, really enthusiastic about this topic. Live Aid was on July 13th, 1985, but the We Are the World release was actually in March and predated that, and that was part of something called USA for Africa. It was a separate initiative by that super group of all those spectacular stars through Columbia Records, and they raised $60 million for famine relief.
Wow.
$60 million for famine relief from that amazing viral video of all of them singing their parts of We Are the World. It's a magnificent song and a magnificent video.
Yes. And now it's hard for me to share my story because it wasn't at Live Aid, Amy. So thank you for that. I'm going to bring us back down to the everyday world, and I'll make it a little bit more impressive, and I'll call the conference. It was a conference, but I'll say I'm at this swanky conference, Amy, right? I've got my big girl blazer on, my clicker in hand, and I'm ready to drop wisdom like Oprah hands out cars. But midway through my talk, I decide to make it interactive. So I'm strutting up the aisle, I'm asking folks questions, I'm on a roll until my heel gets cozy with the AV cord. And next thing you know, boom, I'm flying like a majestic giraffe doing the splits. I landed flat on my back. The mic was still in my hand, though, like I didn't let go of the mic. My feet are in the air like a baby turtle, and then there's silence. Then the entire ballroom erupts in the laughter, including me, because now I'm gasping for breath on the carpet. But here's the kicker: without missing a beat, I roll over, crawl to my feet and shout, ta-da! That, ladies and gentlemen, is how you make a point land. So they gave me a standing ovation, not for my slides, for my unplanned interpretive dance routine. But there's a lesson in my story. The lesson is life will trip you, so fall big. Make it a show and always wear cute underwear, just in case your oopsie has an audience. So that's what I learned with that one. Yes. Anyway, thank you, ladies, for both sharing such important things. I feel like my story pales in comparison, but we will move on to echoing the enigma question. And the question
Please.
is, what's the time when something about you made a trait, quirk, or weird side felt like a setback, but secretly turned out to be your superpower? And I'll start with you, Debbie.
Well, first, Lisa, I want to tell you yours was the final ending, which taught us how to do the
<Ta-da>.
ta-da. So thank you for that. Okay, this one might cancel me. It might get me canceled, but I do not like ice cream. I know. Everyone gasps when I say
No.
it. Like, are you even human? Yes, I am. And if what's ironic is I grew up in a family who made homemade ice cream every weekend. It was a summer ritual
Wow.
that most people would dream of, that creamy, rich, handcrafted goodness nearly every weekend. The whole neighborhood would gather around my mom's and dad's garage waiting for their first glorious scoop. And me, I was the odd man out. While the other kids were losing their minds chasing ice cream trucks like Santa was on wheels, I was over here like, eh. And people would say, "You're missing out, you're missing out. Just try it again." And I did, and again, and again, and again. But nope, still not a fan. The funny part? I think I lucked out. While others talk about midnight cravings and having to avoid the freezer aisle, I breeze on by like a dessert ninja, which I'm not, just not a dessert fan for ice cream. No pull, no regret. Someone once said to me, "I don't know I can trust someone who doesn't like ice cream." That just cracks me up. I never knew ice cream was a deal breaker. But don't worry, my husband loves ice cream, and he knows his pint is 100% safe around me. Life has a funny way. We all have quirks. Mine just happens to be the dessert everyone else would take to a deserted island.
Yes.
So Lisa, let's normalize being deliciously different.
Yes, I like it. Deliciously different. Well, there's some people, I have a few friends that don't eat ice cream too, but mainly because they're lactose intolerant or they just don't tolerate it well. So it's more of a sensitivity to it. So they'd avoid it. But
That's
yeah.
not me. I just don't like
Yeah. You
it.
just don't like it. Yeah, there's
Nope.
very few people that I've heard in my lifetime say they don't like ice cream. But thank you for sharing that. And thank you for daring to be different.
Okay,
And how about you, Amy?
and thanks for not canceling me.
Nobody's canceling you. How about
Okay.
you?
Okay, so a trait. I'll dwell on that one. A trait that I think was kind of quirky about me, and that I guess I was conditioned to be that way because I grew up with a sister who had Down syndrome, and Joycey's education and well-being was obviously a very big focal point of the family. She was 3.5 years older, and we just had a lot to do with her care, her education in a time when there were no channels for special ed kids. There weren't any. So I guess my trait became generosity and empathy. And I would be the little girl who went to the neighbor who was just moving in. And if there was a scratch on her furniture, I'd say, "Oh, I have furniture polish at home that I can bring you." And I was the one who was laid back and didn't run to be the first online or do that. And I guess in modern lingo, I cringe to think it was people pleasing, but it was just how I was. And I guess my superpower now, or my super passion, is just to be kind. And I know that the majority of the world believes that, but a lot of people don't know how to do that. So, if we're all going to be superpowers together, we have to take that generosity and that kindness and dispel all the negative stereotypes about it, like, "Oh, you're a people pleaser," or, "Oh, the nice guys finish last," or and I don't mean this disparagingly, but the world should let them do what they want, and then we'll just be who we are. Okay, so the point is, Let's take generosity and empathy as a world superpower and let it outweigh all the negativity, all the mindsets that say, don't get involved. As a matter of fact, when I first started teaching, the one piece of advice I got was, don't make waves. You're in a new job, don't make waves. But being compassionate, empathetic, and generous to other people, that could be considered going out of your lane. So I'm happy and proud to say that I promote empathy, and the best way to promote it is to live it and practice it every single day, every single hour, and even at the end of the day, say, what did I do today to help someone else? What did I do today to value someone else? What did I do from generosity of spirit to help someone smile? And if everybody on the planet did that every single day, I think we'd be in a really idyllic paradise.
Yes, Amy, that is so good. And I'm thinking if we combine yours with Debbie's, you can say, what did I do today to support someone that dislikes ice cream? And that's where the empathy comes in. So, yes, empathy for ice cream eaters everywhere. Non-ice cream eaters everywhere, I should say. All right. So, enough joking. Joking aside, so for me, well, this kind of leads into my answer because it's easier for me. I pretty much for this picked my big, messy, goofy sense of humor. And when I was younger, fresh in the business world, I honestly thought that I constantly needed to crack jokes because that made people think I was like a lot of times people wouldn't think I was serious enough. And you know the vibe, the suit and tie boardrooms where everyone's all synergy and Q3 deliverables. And meanwhile, I'm over here dropping one-liners about donut holes and awkward icebreakers because those icebreakers were kind of awkward. So I even had somebody say once, Lisa, maybe dial down the funny if you want to be taken seriously. Well, spoiler, that was terrible advice. Why was it terrible advice? Because it turns out my ha-ha gene is the best magic trick I have. And when people laugh, they listen. And when they giggle, they learn. And when they snort, they remember you. So laughing, having people laugh really helps them remember things better. So that, oops, I'm too silly trait. It was a total setup for my career. It's what turns me into the play queen that I am today, helping grown-ups remember they're allowed to have fun and solve big problems at the same time. So now what I say is bring the weird, embrace the quirk, let them underestimate your giggle power, then watch you win the whole game. So that's what I said about that one. And now we're going to move into our fifth and final segment. It's called Echoing the Transformation. And the question today, our transformation question is, what's one oopsie or setback you're grateful for now? And how did it transform you into the person you are today? So, Debbie, what are your thoughts on this one?
Okay, I'm going to take us back a little bit to what I was talking a little bit about in the first, but whoo, this one hits deep. During the height of the opiate crisis, doctors across the country began rapidly pulling patients off medical cannabis, I mean, off pain meds with no safety net. I was one of those patients. After more than 2 decades being prescribed opiates for the same medical from the same medical system that once supported them, suddenly abandoned me and millions of others. And in that moment, sent me on a mission to find answers. Outside of the traditional system, I discovered something no doctor had ever taught me or shared with me. We all have an endocannabinoid system, one built-in regulatory system that plays a critical role in pain, sleep, mood, inflammation, and more. And I only learned this because I was studying a plant called cannabis that produces cannabinoids that interact beautifully with the ECS. With our own endocannabinoid system that our body produces these compounds, and when they're out of balance and they're not working properly for us, the cannabis plant can provide that extra support. So through education and cannabinoid therapies and obtaining certifications, I slowly started reclaiming my life. I no longer use 24 pharmaceuticals, all replaced with one natural plant. No longer need a 24-hour caregiver to manage all of my daily needs and my family's. No longer need oxygen around the clock. I am now in the driver's seat of my health. What started as a devastating moment became a complete transformation, not just in my health, but in my life's purpose. The opiate crisis cracked me open. It also made space for me to rebuild stronger. And now I get to share all I have learned with others to find their way too. I will leave you with this. Do not be afraid to give up the medical system quo for better health. Often the unexpected and unwanted lead us to the answers we need. Let's normalize healing beyond the status quo.
Yes, wow, that's a powerful story. And I've heard it before, but every time it just really, goes deep. So thank you for sharing that. How about you, Amy?
Well, I'm just reflecting. There's a through line to all of our stories and all of our experiences. Actually, when we total the sum of our life's experiences, and it's very clear that transformation comes from challenge. We could call it suffering at times because it truly is suffering. Pain and hardship are sometimes not a choice, but suffering is a choice. Suffering is a mindset that all of us clearly reject and clearly have left behind in the dust so that we can go on so empowered. And a case in point that shaped my whole life and transformed me into whom I am is a diagnosis of Crohn's disease at age 19. Never heard of it, never knew anybody with it. Actually, I didn't know anyone with it until I was much, much older. So, how do we transform and how do we use a setback, like a physical setback that's quite debilitating and challenging and different? How do we use that to propel our lives? And in all of our cases, we dealt with our experiences with style and grace and fortitude and sometimes no choice. And it brings to mind a friend who had extreme surgeries, and she was even on tube feeding. And she went ahead and made a whole business out of finding a solution in her own transformation, where she rescued little Rosie, her dog, and trained Rosie to be a service dog who could fetch things for her, who could be at her side and steady her when she was kind of woozy from surgery. This was amazing. Bring her cell phone to her when she was in the bathroom, call her mother from another room when she needed help. So that's an amazing example of triumph, where a setback similar to what I went through is now transforming not only the health and well-being and mindset of this young woman, but now she has a business where she helps train service dogs, where there used to be a limit to only thinking maybe they were for blindness or vision impairment of some kind. And now these dogs, like the canine dogs, they're sensitized to recognize body changes before someone's having a seizure. They can find there's a gluten in something, which prevented an allergic reaction. So the transformation is widespread once we decide that we're going to do the best we can and we're going to share. My biggest setback was not sharing my illness sooner with other people by hiding it as if that was easy. But by hiding it, I missed out on the fact that I had faculty members that had similar issues, and also a friend who agonized over having to have surgery and take time off from work. When he finally went to his boss, he found out his boss had the same condition. So don't hide, be bold, be out there, and be part of that transformation. It is a miracle.
Yes, Amy, that's such a powerful transformation that you're describing too, and especially with animals. I just love hearing stories about animals and resilience and how they help humans and just being better humans and doing, I mean, they're just so helpful.
And
So
Jillian
thank you for
calls,
sharing.
and
What's that?
Jillian calls her business Creating New Tales, TALS.
Oh, I
And
like that.
it's just so beautiful.
Oh, thank you. Well, I'm going to follow that up with a story about stand-up. So I don't think it's as transformational, but I do have a point to it. And for me, it's proof that your flop can be your crown jewel. And here's why. So decades ago, I was doing stand-up in this theater. It was the week before I crushed it. People were cackling so hard, I thought someone might need CPR. It was the kind of night for a comedian where you walk off the stage thinking, book the tour bus, comedy legend status, here I come. Fast forward 7 days later, same jokes, same stage, and the vibe was tumbleweeds. I'm talking pin drop silence. One guy checked his watch, and I swear I heard somebody whisper, "Is she okay?" I left the stage thinking, well, that's it. Time to open a glitter factory for sad clowns or something. That bomb was my golden ticket. It taught me that laughter isn't about the perfect punchline. It's about making people feel safe enough to giggle with you, not just at you. And that epic fail made me loosen my grip on perfection. So now when I speak, I don't aim for flawless, I aim for real. So yeah, my oops transformed me into someone who knows that connection beats perfection every single time. And if the glittery factor, if that glitter factor ever happens, you're all getting coupons. So that's what I'll give to you, coupons for the glitter factory. So that's what I thought about that. And I do have a special bonus for today. We're going to call it Echo This Now. And basically, the question I have for you both, surprise, is what quote in the last 7 days that you heard you think is worth echoing? If you want to share that now, I know I'll give you a minute. Debbie, are you ready? You're smiling, so that means you're ready.
I'm ready. And this is really trending on Pinterest right now, and it just resonates with me and exactly what we're talking about today. So smile. Most smiles are started by another smile.
Yes, that is so true. When you see somebody else smiling, even if you walk into an awkward place, you start smiling back. That's right. I love it. How about you, Amy? What do you say? What say you?
Well, in line with our topic in this episode about the oops moments, the setbacks, many of us use the language, "Oh, I failed. I was a failure." And it's funny, I just had this idea of this quote I'd heard before, and I found it. John C. Maxwell, the leadership man, developer, author, seminar leader, John C. Maxwell said, and this is so true, fail early, fail often, but always fail forward. And I think
Yes.
there's such empowerment in how we can propel ourselves through failure to success.
Yes. So good. And mine is kind of along the same lines of our theme, but as perfect as boring, messy as magic. And to me, that hits me right in the funny bone because it's true. Every flub, fumble, or goofy oopsie makes life way more interesting. And I'm echoing that one on repeat because constantly on any given day, there's something that I flub up, right? That was flub, FLUB. Just in case anybody's listening and say, like, did she just say a bad word? No. No, she didn't. Anyway, so before we close out, I just want to call on you, either Debbie or Amy. Any final thoughts about today's episode?
I think it's just nice to realize that anything that happens in life, it is an oops. But from that oops, you can turn it around. And it's just allowing yourself to be curious enough to explore and understand what you can do. Because when you put yourself at the center of everything and looking at it, how is it best for me? That's when you'll start finding those answers. So, oops, let's just keep
Yes.
on going.
Yes. Oops, and keep going. Amy, your thoughts?
Especially as parents, as partners, as friends, we have to encourage others to accept. We have to accept them with their flaws, and we have to. I remember learning to say, "Oh, that you didn't make a mistake. You didn't make a mistake. Don't be down on yourself." and say to your son or a student, what did we learn from this experience? What did we learn? It's a lesson. It's a lesson. It's not a mistake. And great wisdom comes from the mindset of how we accept and couch our language so that we can move forward empowered that, hey, it's good that that happened. If that didn't happen, I wouldn't be where I am today. And we hear that often, and that's what we need to stand firm in.
Yes, yes. I will thank you both, Amy and Debbie. And that's a wrap on today's joyful journey from oopsie to opportunity. And if you take just one thing with you, let it be this. Your mistakes aren't stop signs. They're secret shortcuts to something even better. Every slip up, face plant, or awkward moment can be your best plot twist yet. And if you're brave enough to laugh, learn, and bounce higher, here's to celebrating every whoops that turns into a watch me win. Go out there, stay playful, stay curious, and echo that hope, opportunity, laughter, enigma, and transformation everywhere you go. Until next time, keep flipping those flubs into fuel. You've got this.
Yeah.
Thank you for joining us today and Echo This. We hope you enjoy it and walk away with something to echo. Tune in next time. Until then, take care and keep echoing. Feel free to email us at echo, the letter two, or the number two, gether, G-E-T-H-E-R. Thank you for watching.
Thank you for tuning in to Echo, empowering conversations of hope and opportunity. Your comments and questions fuel our discussions. Connect with us at Echo Together. That's Echo, the number two, Gather, on social media. And don't hesitate to drop your questions in our inbox at echotogether@gmail.com. Until we meet again, take care, keep echoing, and remember, your voice matters.